She's not?
Yes.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Okay. Well, welcome to our Parking Advisory Committee meeting for February 19th. And welcome everyone in the audience as well. Or not audience, what do you call it?
Yes.
Yes. We'll do a roll call.
Gary Ripka, fisherman.
Lisa Eamon, Tenai Beach resident.
Robert Eamon, city council liaison.
Derek Togos, city Newport staff.
And Kevin Lewis, Tenai Beach business owner.
Janelle Goffman, business owner, Bayfront.
Bill Brannigan.
Great. Everyone had a chance to read the minutes from the last meeting? And do we have anyone who, are there any feedback or comments on the minutes from last meeting, Bill?
They looked fine what Sherry produced, but I didn't look at all the video. So,
okay.
Put forth a recommendation to go ahead and approve the minutes from the last meeting.
Anyone second that?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay. We'll move on to the agenda for today's meeting, and just a reminder for everybody who's joining us as a guest, normally we reserve guest feedback till the end of our agenda. However, if Derek opens that up to a different scenario, that's fine, but we will address your concerns. And thank you if you're people who wrote in and gave us feedback.
Right, everyone.
Great, so just gonna touch on what's on the agenda overall. So for tonight, we have a debrief of the nine neighbors, neighborhood association outreach meeting that we held on the 13th. And we'll have a chance to talk about next steps. Looks like there are a few people that were here, that were at that meeting and are here tonight. There looks like there are maybe some folks who did not attend it as well. So you have the PowerPoint presentation that I made. I'll skim through it. I'll put it on the big screen and kind of skim through it. And then I'm prepared to kind of talk about some of the issues that came up, how those can be addressed, and next steps in terms of the NID Beach implementation. The next agenda item we have is some fiscal year 25-26 parking fund budget. I'll have that teed up online as well to kind of go through the draft budget. We're just at the beginning of the budget. If you're not familiar with, I don't know where you are familiar with it, but I'll just mention it for the public. The city starts, this is when the city is really ramping up its annual budgeting process. The budget would be for the fiscal year starting July 1st and extending on for the next 12 months. And so the budget will be reviewed by you guys. I just want to talk over some of the concepts and things because we're at a spot where we can make some adjustments, specifically by capital projects. But also explain what all the budgeting items are. That then will go through the budget committee, which is a separate committee, before it's formally adopted by the city council.
When do you think we'll have that?
What?
The budget to review.
For the upcoming year? Well, I'll be going over the draft parking fund budget tonight. And you'll see kind of where we're at and what our projected numbers are. The parking fund, it'll get adjusted and tweaked a little bit as it goes through the budget committee process, but not major changes. There's really not room for major changes. And then I've got some time reserved for goal setting, which is largely, as I mentioned in my staff memo, an opportunity for you guys to kind of talk about things for the upcoming year that you may want to see, you want to see the committee address so that we can. I don't have the council's. I don't recall. We did a joint goal setting with the council. I don't recall there being any parking specific goals that the council had, unlike they did when they directed us to implement on the Bayfront and then implement in Nye Beach. So council's goals were largely on other issues this year. That's what I recall.
I don't remember anything parking coming up.
But that said, the committee has an opportunity to kind of talk about what it wants to tackle in the coming year as well. I'm going to go ahead and put that presentation up. I'll just kind of go through it real quick. It's the same material I covered at the Nine Neighbors. By the way, we had 33 people sign up. So we were somewhere in the mid-30s in terms of attendance, but we have a good, healthy list of contact names and email addresses that we'll keep informed as the students.
That was the Nye Beach outreach?
Mm-hmm. 33. So let me just go ahead and do a share on this.
Felt like more people.
Oh. It's 33 for the name guy.
Yeah. Okay, that looks a lot better than the one at the Nine Neighbors. The opening slide, you can barely see it. But one of the things we touched upon is not everybody's familiar with the history of parking management, but the city's been actively engaged or has tried to be actively engaged in parking management in Nye Beach to Bayfront City Center since the early 80s. And these are the reason those three geographic areas are of consequence is because, you know, these are areas where you have a lot of the available parking is in publicly owned lots or is being provided along public streets. And these historically have been high demand areas of the city center has over the last few decades really struggled. And so we went through three basically eras of how parking was managed, and the recommendations that were ultimately adopted by the City Council in 2020 out of the parking study are recommendations that said we are to move to demand management, first in the Bayfront with a very specific program, and then in Long Beach, with the objective of accomplishing three things: improving turnover, reducing congestion and problematic parking behavior, paying for parking enforcement, because these are timed parking areas and have been for many, many years, and we have to have somebody who actually enforces that, and generating enough revenue to maintain the parking assets that are in these areas in a manner where they continue to be useful and meet the needs of all of the various users. So those are the three things that we're directed. They're outlined in policy in our conference plan. I've got those if we want to go through goals and all that at any point in time. But that's where we're at. All along the way, this work has been informed by a parking advisory committee of some form. We've always had one. They've focused on different things. Parking advisory committee in the past was very instrumental in moving through the different options as well, and worked a lot on these recommendations that we're implementing right now. That's why we had a parking study that was wrapped up in 2018, but a package of recommendations that wasn't adopted by the council until March of 2020. It's because we had a parking advisory committee who was still working on adjusting some of those recommendations and goals and implementation measures as they came out of the parking study. And you remember it all, Gary, because you were there through it all.
I think I'm the oldest member.
But the parking study was a lot of field survey work. There was quite a bit of analysis that was done, inventorying work that was done, development of financial strategies, that kind of thing. Ultimately, the focus in terms of demand management, which is pricing of parking through meters or permits or things of that nature, is focused on those areas that are at or above 85% of utilization during peak periods of use. That's basically functionally full. People have a difficult time finding a place to park. The council adopted a very fairly specific program, as was outlined in the parking study for the Bayfront, but for Nye Beach, they wanted to go with a lighter touch there. But in both areas, the policy and goals are very clear that those basic three mantras have to be met, that we need to pursue something that's going to improve parking turnover, that's going to proportionally pay for parking enforcement, and that's going to generate enough revenue to meet our maintenance needs at a minimum. Now, there are other things people wanted, and you get captured in here, too. There's a desire for funding for rapid transit between Night Beach and the Bayfront. You guys have talked about that before. That's been looked at in some detail with the county. We know that's going to cost, you know, at the time, over $200,000 is probably closer to $300,000 at this point, annually to make something like that work. These all cost. Another that's been kicked around and discussed as a potential future thing that, again, would require revenue that would be generated through these programs would be a van pool, carpool type subsidy for businesses. We had the COVID pandemic and redirected our efforts, and so this kind of went away during that period of time. We focused on business assistance. We got business assistance grants rolled out. We loosened up rules relative to seating outside, that kind of stuff. But then we got back on it, and as this committee knows, you guys spent some quality time working through the parking management vendor selection process, because the city had, we were starting from scratch for the Bayfront. So we went and looked at a bunch of different vendors who had a range of different proposals, and ultimately went with T2 Systems, which is what we have down on the Bayfront right now. And the city ended up purchasing a full package of services that are kind of integrated here. Permitting is all electronic. The pay stations that were selected are solar powered, but they have coin and credit card. That was much discussed amongst the committee, whether or not coin was something that we should go with. Not everybody uses cards or is comfortable providing their information electronically. So the choice was to go with coins, and that's what we have, and that's worked reasonably well. We have the text-to-park, which is what the little sign is right there. We have the electronic permitting interface that's linked through the city's website for purchasing permits, which are coded to license plate numbers, and enforcement is now handled via license plate recognition technology that's been installed on one of our police department's vehicles. Code enforcement is handled by the police department, and I think I include the update. Our code enforcement position is just about to be filled. The individual that was selected is going through final background checks.
So oh, great. What's the schedule on that, you think?
Anytime. We're just waiting for the background check to be wrapped up. While we didn't do this initially, the city did later, and we had some conversations about that. Chose to go with T2 to assist with collections as well. So those that don't pay parking tickets, they help track those folks down. The Bayfront parking management, we implemented that May of 2024. Provided the council a six-month report at the end of 2024 that took us through the peak period, May to October. We've had over 110,000 transactions on the Bayfront using the pay stations and the text-to-pay options. And then we also had different permit zones that were priced differently depending on their location, and were also free parking areas. So we went through all of that with the council. The Bayfront parking budget was relatively substantial, and I covered that at the outreach meeting. It's a bigger implementation. We have 10 pay stations. We've had three parking lots that we needed to surface. We did an interfund borrow on that to make that happen, because it's $250,000 to fix up those three lots that were in very poor condition. So that's being paid off with meter revenues over the next few years. And I'll cover that and where that fits in the budget when we get to that. And then post regulatory, there were a large number of signs and signage changes. I want to say to the tune of a couple hundred. And so it's quite a bit of work that was broken up between our streets crews and contract help to make that all happen. The Night Beach budget that we have in the current fiscal year for use this year is between $50,000 and $75,000. So it's more modest, because our expectation is what we'll be discussing or have been discussing is a more modest implementation. One of the key factors, and this is also encapsulated in policy and you'll see it in budget, all revenue from parking revenue is to be kept in the parking fund and used exclusively for parking system improvements. Now, we didn't take the step of saying what's generated in the Bayfront stays in the Bayfront, what's generated in Nye Beach stays in Nye Beach, what's generated eventually in City Center stays there. We didn't do that because we recognized that, you know, we're going to need to be flexible in terms of which parking lots. Sometimes we don't even have a choice if we have, you know, failure in a lot. We need to address the lot. It doesn't matter where it's at. But there is the expectation that there be some proportional contributions coming from the districts, and so that the Bayfront's not the only one generating revenue for, you know, dealing with public parking lot issues citywide. So I thought I'd fix that. The image, which I did have for the presentation, shows, you have the map that shows the area. The area in orange is the area that we're talking about for Nye Beach. That area includes those areas that are currently restricted to 3-hour parking, 9-6, and the Nye Beach turnaround, and the back lot. Now, we produced maps that showed all of the marked and unmarked spaces in the Nye Beach area, but that's just so that we have a sense of inventory in that area. But what we're talking about in terms of changes boils down to where we have 3-hour parking limits along Coast, Beach, and Third. We will change those to 3 hours unless you have a permit, in which case you can exceed 3 hours. The other change, two changes, would be to the 9-inch turnaround, which we're proposing to meter with an 8-hour maximum stay. And I priced that when we get to budget. I'll go through that in terms of the cost of the revenue generation, because you want to know what we're talking about. Assuming $1.25 an hour or $1 an hour. Now, we're currently at $1 an hour on the Bayfront, but one of the things that the study had recommended, and the council's policies that they adopted say be consistent with the study, didn't assume that we would be eating the fees, and I'll go over what that's amounted to. And it's not inconsequential. And so that's why the $1.25 is in play for discussion purposes.
So we're not going to talk about Elizabeth Street at all?
Mm-mm. No, we're going with part of this too. One, when the parking study was presented to council, and the council worked through this, in early 2020, the recommendation of the parking study was far more robust for Nye Beach, with quite a bit more in terms of with meters on Coast and Third and Beach, and that's not what they wanted to see. They wanted to see something that was more modest in Nye Beach, but still address those three principles we talked about.
One of the letters that I read today had concerns about Elizabeth Street.
Well, we did. One of the things that came in late was just a request too on Elizabeth to make sure that the no parking areas are properly striped. And we have some of that already striped for no parking, but I couldn't tell if, and this came in from Councilor Kelly, whether or not she just wants that better marked or she wants it expanded. So, and those are things we can talk about. Because striping in both areas is part of the program we're dealing with here.
Well, I think part of the confusion is it lists a number of parking spots on Elizabeth Street,
mm-hmm.
which is, by my rough estimate, does not include that stripe thing. So I think it's creating confusion whether that includes the places where they're not allowed to park, or they are, because it lists like 28, and it seems like that's way too small a number if
mm-hmm.
that entire street segment was envisioned to be allowing parking. And I think other people have mentioned to me personally that they're concerned that that no parking zone does not go away because it keeps the view pristine.
Right.
And that's a big concern for a lot of people.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's not the intent. I think it's just, you know, we had that background data that was done at the time. The inventory was taken care of, and we just showed it to give us a sense of what kind of total parking availability we have.
Right, and I think that's what it says, creating confusion, because it lists it as available, but most of that street you can't actually park on. So people are confused.
Right.
And you're not envisioning.
So you're not touching Knight Beach in the plan. All right, Elizabeth Street in the plan.
We're not looking to touch Elizabeth.
That would satisfy that in that particular way.
Right, as long as we just make sure that the no parking is properly painted out.
Right.
I think that's what Councillor Jacoby's concerned about. Because it is fading, so sometimes it's hard to tell whether you're allowed to park there or not. And, of course, people double park there all the time at sunset. In fact, I have been known to occasionally do that. And I live there. So, but going somewhere else, it's like, oh, pretty sunsets. Stop, take a picture.
Right. No. Let's go to this slide real quick. Okay, so this, I pulled up the one that actually, that had the actual PowerPoint, the PDF for some reason. My image disappeared. See the area in orange on this?
It's the only place we're talking about right now.
Correct.
We're basically talking about the Knight Beach turnaround more than anything.
And a couple surrounding streets.
And some surrounding streets.
Yeah.
So we're talking about Coast between 6th and Olive, and we're talking about 3rd between effectively Broken Cliff and Beach. So that core area where we currently have three-hour limitations. Now, they had not been enforced for a number of years, as you all know, because the city had no parking enforcement. The city had, police department had tried to make that work off and on over the years. Without dedicated funding, they tried to contract that to third parties and rely on parking tickets to pay for the program. Never worked, not even close to get working. And so
didn't work on the Bayfront either.
Didn't work on the Bayfront either, right? So we shifted over to this program. So
well, I think the key thing is with the parking is it's paying for that enforcement, which is citywide, not just the three parking districts, too.
Correct.
So it's an important to realize that the funds that these three districts drive are funding the parking enforcement for the entire city. So it's not like a Bayfront versus Nye Beach versus City Center. It's like, this is just a service for everyone to get the revenues in, to give us parking enforcement, RV abatement, all those kind of things, more teeth.
But to be clear, parking enforcement paid for this program is focused on these three areas.
Mm-hmm.
We do have community service officers that work elsewhere in the city to deal with derelict vehicles, like you mentioned, and things of that nature. This individual is focused on these three geographic areas.
Right. But parking enforcement doesn't even come close to paying for the maintenance.
No. I don't have a chance to. That was well documented in the study, and so the changes. Let's run through them here real quick. Within the orange boundary, three-hour limit, 9 to 6, 7 days a week. That's what it is existing right now on those pink lines are along those streets. The night turnaround would be metered with an eight-hour max, and we do need to talk about a couple of things that came up with the outreach meeting. One, for what period of time? Do we just simply align that with the other areas, 9 to 6, and so outside those, it's not an issue. And then we need to deal with the seasonal aspect of it, which also was part of the council's policy was that we should do the demand management on a seasonal basis. And
which is what we do on the Bayfront.
Which is what we do on the Bayfront. My recommendation, frankly, would be to match what we're doing on the Bayfront because shutting the machines off causes its own logistical nightmare for us. If we're going to have pay stations operate for a few months and then be dead, not operating for many months, and then expect that they're going to pop back up and work properly. Those things we learned are getting like daily updates to address issues with changes to credit card rules and things of that nature. So,
I have mixed feelings on that year-round parking
e-permit
on it.
The The e-permit pricing we talked about was $35 annually for residents, with residents being allowed to have one permit per license holder in the house. Now, in Nine Beach, we currently had in our finance department 92 free permits, because we've been doing free permits down there for years. That has to go away. But I don't know how well that's been maintained. Some of those may no longer be viable. You know.
And that was a one permit per license player, right, or license holder.
That's the point, yeah.
What if you have friends come over?
Well, then they come over. One of the things, though, too, Gary, is you know, your residential stuff, if you're running a three-hour limit between 9 and 6, a lot of your residential activity is going to be outside the regulated hours anyway.
I get it now. I'm just trying to be more educated on Nye Beach.
Yeah, but essentially, I guess if you have friends come over, you have a permit that your friends don't.
Right, but at past 6, it doesn't matter.
This doesn't matter, and also, this is not paid. It's just an hour limit.
Right. So
they don't have to pay.
It's not just 6. I mean, it's a three-hour limit. I mean, without a permit.
So your friends can still come over, and they don't have to pay a park.
Essentially, it doesn't change from what is happening now.
Right. They have to move their car or park in a place that doesn't have a three-hour limit. Or you have the permit and you park on the street and they park in your driveway.
Keep in mind, the bulk of the housing in Nine Beach is not on these regulated streets anyway. I mean, you know, and we're just talking about Coast, Third, and Beach. And we're not,
how many houses are we actually looking at in the residence?
You know, it's like
probably
I said,
everybody sitting here will hear about it.
We have, well, yeah. To be honest, we've had, like I said, we had 92 who had registered under the free permit. That's all I can really share with you. I mean, that's going to change all the time. The way I would envision this working is, this is just like we did with the commercial fishermen, is this is the invitation permit, because we're going to have to verify that they actually, you know, reside or own one of those properties, along, you know, that's adjacent to one of these streets for us to do that.
Yeah, and I don't remember I think we mentioned it in the last one about, okay, is it the person living there, renting there, or is it the owner of the place, or, like, who gets the,
the distinction that I think, and that question's come up from folks via email, who got some of this information, too, is that I think the only way we can really make this work, you know, functionally, is that it's whoever, you know, owns it, or through like a utility account lives there, and then we're good. We're not gonna, if they live there seasonally, there's no way really for us to ferret that out, and then I don't think it's worth us trying to chase that down.
They can still apply for it when they're seasonal if they live there. I rent this 6 months out of the year.
Yeah, I mean, for example, we got a short-term rental that's down in there where it's owned by two couples, okay? And so we're gonna have four $35 permits for when they're there, and they're rarely there together, kind of deal. But then you're going to have the $10 a day lodging permit for the guests. So that's how that would work, and that's kind of a complicated. But we get all those weird kind of, you know, combos. 16-hour maximum stay. We spent some time talking to folks in IDH about the 72-hour maximum stay for the residential permit. 72 hours is not new. We've had that on the books citywide for a very long time. And you know, that's really the one that our code enforcement uses to deal with derelict vehicles that have just been sat there for a very, very long time, may not be operating anymore, and need to be moved and removed from the public right away.
16 hours seems short to me. But
that's what we did on the Bayfront, trying to be consistent on some of this. And I assumed kind of, when we get the budget, I'll share with them, but I'm not assuming massive uptake on the lodging day permits, because again, you're going to have a number of people staying either at the hotels that are within this area, like Sylvia, or short-term rentals. that will be coming and going outside of the regulated hours anyway. So they're not going to be concerned about buying a parking permit. So it's going to be some who do, some who don't. You have to just kind of sort that out. And we're looking at, across all of the lots, just under 200 total parking spaces that are impacted. And I wanted to say we were close to 600 in the Bayfront. We're in that ballpark. I'd have to go back and look. It's quite a bit bigger. That's the point.
Yeah, I think it's around 600.
And that sounds about right. It's in that ballpark.
That's a lot.
So, this was just a picture of the turnaround in the summer from July. You see, it's pretty typical for the summer. It's fully utilized. We went ahead and inventoried, that's what these little dots here are, where all our existing three-hour limit signage is. We have taken the approach that what's out there works for folks, because we don't get a lot of complaints about it. So we weren't proposing to change the 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. But to do this, we've got to swap out all the signs. So this would be the time to do that if there was a desire to. It'll be about 30 signs you have to be swapped.
Wait, so if it already says 3-hour limit 9 to 6, why do we need to change those signs?
Except for permits.
We're going to have to put in the language without a zone blank permit.
Oh.
Can we just add a sign?
Or unless you have a zone. We have a template for it, but yeah. So, because what we're doing is giving people, we had several business folks this last summer say, hey, why can't I get a permit to exceed 3 hours? Because you're enforcing it again, and I got a parking ticket.
Uh-huh.
And I'd like a permit.
Uh-huh.
Just like folks in the Bayfront can have a permit to exceed the 4 hours on the Bayfront. The Visual Arts Center, we have a fair amount of comments on that one, and I think we have some options that we can work with on that. So the Visual Arts center lot is the one, we're talking about the upper one, sandwiched between the Sylvia Beach Hotel and the Visual Arts Center. A number of the guests at the hotel use that parking lot for parking, but it's not their parking lot, it's a public parking lot. We have an issue with this one. In the parking study, it was identified as a poor condition parking lot, which is fair given its existing condition. But we had folks who were complaining that the access on the upper level of the back is inadequate. They've got mobility issues, they have a difficult time getting in and out of the building. It's supposed to be ADA accessible. We've looked at it, it's not ADA compliant. To make it ADA compliant, I shared the cost estimate we had from Civil West. They gave us, I think, four different options for reworking that parking lot. And the one they recommend in terms of it being the most functional, like we're looking at $92,000 or, if you want to ballpark, $100,000 worth of work to make it all happen. We do not have any funding currently available for that. It's an example. It's no different than what we were facing on the Bayfront as well with deferred maintenance on these lots. That's why we tackled the three on the Bayfront the way we did. We spent a fair amount of time talking about that. And that was $250,000 on those three.
And I think at least the majority of the the majority of it is that was a concern because that lot can't be done in the near future. So pain and the turnaround is going to affect the access to that lower. Because it sounds like that's how most of them access.
One of the things that we can do with the Visual Arts Center, because it's a specific facility, is we have the ability to coupon code those pay stations, which means what we would do, and I verified the kind of parameters before this meeting, is we can put in a single day coupon code. We can do various types of coupon codes, but I'll use an example, a single day coupon code that we provide in the back to give to its members, and then that would allow them to park in the lower lot. And the advantage of that is then it's also something that's tallied in the system, so we know how it's used. Not only if it's going to be used for volunteers, but if they have guests. And what we can do is then, because Visual Arts Center is a tourist-oriented facility in of itself, what we can do is budget room tax dollars to offset the cost of those. And then we would know what the cost of those is by the number of coupon codes that are actually used, and then that gets transferred into the parking fund. One of the challenges we have with room tax is we can't use it for infrastructure generally. That's touchier under the room tax laws. They've been constantly trying to get that loosened up in the legislature, but have not been successful. But reimbursing parking fees at a tourist-oriented facility is not a problem. We can do that. You know, that's part and parcel with the event or activity that's occurring at that specific venue. So that would be a way to do it.
And that could also help with the, like you mentioned in the letters, like the volunteers.
That's
right.
Exactly. You know, reading all the letters.
You don't want the volunteers
free parking.
Yeah.
Yep. And that'd be the way to tackle it.
Yeah.
And then we, you know, then it would be, you know, something we'd coordinate with the visual arts center management in terms of what those codes are, and occasionally we'd probably change those codes. But, you know, it's not hard for us to put one in or change it, or if we need one for a special event. We've talked about that, you know, for special events sponsored through the chamber. If they want to do a chamber-associated event that's bringing folks in, and we offer a coupon code for free parking on the Bayfront and Night Beach for that particular event, fair enough. However many of those are used, you know, we then just account for that, and that's reimbursed to the parking district. And that ensures then, too, that on the parking district side, we have what we need to enforce the program and have enough to do things like what we need to do here with the parking lot.
So I have a question about that. You could do two codes, one for the staff volunteers who are going to be there all day or for longer periods, and you could also do a code for guests who are there for a shorter hour, sort of like a validation, like you get 1 hour validated.
Well, validation is another option that we can do, but that's I don't know that we want to go. We have options on that. Or you can do one that's over a multi-day event. Or, I mean, there are different...
So there's like a lot of different options.
There are different options. As we discussed, the one key, though, is they only work with the pay stations right now. The text to park, they said the functionality is coming in March. So soon.
Wait. Say what you just said.
The text park, the QR code signs that we have down there, you can't do the coupons through those yet. I mentioned that at a prior meeting.
Oh, I think
that's a new functionality that our vendor will have in March.
Oh, okay.
So currently you just have to go to the kiosk and put the code in.
Currently you have to do the code in.
Yeah, I did see, I'm on their list, so something came through this week about it being active.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's... I
mean, another one to save the volunteers having to do that on a regular basis is we can do some form of parking permit and account for that monetarily as well.
Oh yeah.
So it could be like a volunteer permit.
Yeah,
it could be a volunteer permit.
Yeah, Night Beach has a bunch of volunteer like businesses. The Bayfront doesn't have that. So, you know, it's good that there's options.
So that's another way, and they would avoid having to punch codes. I mean, frankly, the coupon code works better for like events or activities or something specific. But we can do a volunteer permit that then we put a price point to it. Not that we're charging a volunteer, but that would be the reimbursement rate to the district to move that.
I like the other option better because I feel like a volunteer permit, if you're doing it permit, it's based on license plate. And if I'm going to go, what's the difference? You know, if I volunteer 1 day or 2 hours a week versus, you know, somebody, I mean, if they're volunteering a lot, great. That could
Do you
work.
Like the coupon code approach a little better? Is that
I like that approach better for volunteers, but I mean, the process of getting every volunteer to give you their license plate, to give you their, that's going to be a pain in the butt.
Okay.
I mean, just going from the fisherman who did that process, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
The
volunteer,
yeah, that's the fleet management.
The fleet management. Could you imagine that for the volunteer organizations? A lot of people who are volunteers.
And it's like us having two vessels and different crew members. You have a tendency not to keep up on it.
Right.
I paid for like 3 months for a crew member because I pay for the parking for my boat. I paid free parking for one crew member that didn't work for us for 3 months.
Because
you know, you're not keeping.
That's the thing.
You got to go back in, punch it in, take out. I thought I actually did delete it one time, and then I got billed again, and then I called you, and we went through it on the phone, or and straightened it out.
The
I didn't get reimbursed.
With Fleet, you can sign that permit to a new employee, whereas if it's employee specific, it goes with the employee kind of deal.
So that's why I feel like it's just a weekly code.
Yeah.
Like, here's the volunteer code this week.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that just seems way easier than keeping track of everybody's license plate.
Just doing a little bit, I've done it.
But, you know, as we discussed, one of the things here, too, was to make sure that we had a system that had options so we can tailor it.
Which it does, which is great.
Because there might be volunteers who are, like, basically permanent employees. They're always there versus someone who comes in for the summer once or twice. And I'm thinking, too, if we expand it to more areas, like, eventually, who knows what's going to be in the city center, how many nonprofits are going to be there, and maybe they're going to have different situations. So I'd like to have something flexible to handle a lot of different contingencies. So I think maybe both of those would be things to look at. Also, we have an expert here who knows about the volunteers of the VAC, so we can ask her what, you know, she might think of that.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what their situation is either.
One of the advantages of these different options is they're all trackable and accountable. It can be, you know, dialed in or how many of these are actually being utilized. Are they, you know, do we need to make adjustments based on the rate of utilization? I mean, all that stuff can be discussed down the road.
The only other thing I wanted to mention, since we're just talking about the T2 system, is that I know that somebody mentioned in their letter that there's not an opportunity for people to buy a permit over the phone because it's only digital.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that's true. That might be currently true. However, I think it'd be really easy to. They have a thing that's speech to text.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, in that T2 update, they mentioned something about being able to call a phone number and have it do it virtually with speech to text.
Okay. I'll definitely, once I hear from the vendor on their updates, I'll make sure to bring that information to you so you have a chance to take a look at it. We can talk about how that stuff should or shouldn't be used.
One thing on the visual, before we move away from the Visual Arts Center.
Yeah.
From what I understand, the bottom part is where they unload and load a lot of stuff, reading the letters today, when things are unloaded. Can we put a loading zone right there in front of that? You know, a small loading zone for unloading and loading stuff? They don't have to pay to unload their stuff.
That's fair. That's a good point, Gary. I mean, we've got plenty of them down on the Bayfront.
Yeah.
I mean, my recollection is probably not, because it's a very narrow street, but it might be possible to reserve one of those spaces in the lot as a loading zone. But I don't think you can have it actually on the street right in front.
Yeah.
Because
I think there should be a way to load and unload their stuff.
There definitely should be.
The other thing is, this is true on the Bayfront, you know, the parking enforcement doesn't enforce against loading when you say it's an active working waterfront.
Right.
So if somebody's unloading out of a vehicle and there wasn't an available loading spot and they're briefly stopping the flow of traffic while that happens.
Yeah.
You know, it's exercise of judgment by parking enforcement.
Right.
We try to cover all the bases we can. But
well, we could stripe it.
Yeah.
Even though people are driving through there.
Huh? I can talk to engineering about that and see what might work down there and double back to you on that. I'd be happy to do that. What loading zone add down there? So again, although the permits are electronic, we covered that. We do have QR codes that we, particularly for the lodging day passes, we'll make available for those that own short-term rentals or hotels, where you know the folks can just use the QR code to access the electronic permit. To your question, Janelle. This something akin to what you're seeing right here would be what the new sign would look like. Right now it's 3-hour parking, 6 a.m. to, or not 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. We'd add the accept by zone blank permit, which is very similar to what we have on the.
Yeah.
Can't we just add a little sign underneath it for a lot less money?
They're not that bad. It's not that big.
I was going to say, it might not be a lot.
It's still going to be more or less the same size as the existing one, which you see on that pole there.
Okay.
Now, one thing you had mentioned is,
the labor's the most expensive part.
What's that?
The labor's the most expensive part.
Yeah. This is one where I think the numbers are small enough, our streets crew may be able to do this.
Okay.
If not, I think we still have enough, we would have enough in the budget to take care of it. It gets tougher if we start talking about moving poles around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or replacing a bunch of poles. Although we do have, with the Bayfront implementation, the Public Works ordered some extra brown poles, so we have some of those extra ones on inventory at the Public Works shop. But what we're shooting for here is for the e-permit side of it, getting them up and available by May 1st, so that people have about a month before they have to have one. Like we did on the Bayfront, there'll be a break-in period where folks, if they don't have a permit and they overstayed in 3 hours, the people can say, you need to get a permit and give them a period of time. And so, before they start giving them a permit. And then go live with the basic equipment turnaround and the permits in the 3 hour areas on the June 1st of 2020.
So, our footprint at Night Beach is not going to be very big, realistically.
No, it's pretty. It's
we had that specific conversation. It's just a turnaround for payment. But. Yeah.
So, I mean, before I came tonight, I'm torn on Nye Beach, to be honest. But I do believe, that people that use the facility should pay for the facilities, just like what we did at the Bayfront for the maintenance. And using the Nye Beach turnaround, we're only charging really basically for the Nye Beach turnaround area.
That's largely, I'll cover the budget here soon, because we've really tried in our conversations to keep this scaled modestly, but to generate enough to meet those maintenance needs. And the way to do that requires all of those pieces, because to try to do that strictly with permits for users would be very, very expensive and unacceptable. By businesses and others. So it's always a combination. That's why your permit fees are modest. Your meter stuff's going to be a little bit bigger. You'll see that here. But it's still modest compared to the Bayfront. I mean, in terms of the overall probably utilization and the revenue that's generated.
And the concern, too, is having a business right there is at least short term, because right now, and looking at the study, the turnover and the turnaround is less than an hour typically already, with the 16-hour limit, except for on the rare occasions where there's events where people take advantage of it. So I think it's more locals or semi-locals that come in and get their coffees and take their dogs, and now you got to pay if you're there normally for less than an hour. Why do I want to pay an hour? And I can see, and some of the concern with the businesses too is it's going to congest the other parts now of that 3 hour limit. Because instead of parking there and paying, I'm just going to go half a block and park in front of that business to go get my
car. It's
still
only a buck and a quarter.
I don't.
I'll park closer, pay the buck and a quarter, and not have to walk in the rain.
I mean,
we're talking about a lot of money here.
I know, but when you do it every day.
Yeah.
Let me pop over to, let me talk about next steps real quick. So I shared with you that, I gave you the quote in the packet. So the two pay stations, we're about 20,000, so 10,000 a piece. So that quote's still good. Remember, we're dealing with a Canadian firm, so they have bugged me a couple times saying, where are you at with this? Because we may need to adjust our fees, but that's where it stands right now. Getting a price quote for the swap out of for the generation of the new signs, these guys, but that's going to be relatively modest. So I'm feeling fairly good that we're between about 75,000 top end that we have budgeted for this specific project this fiscal year, that we're fine. We're going to be okay monetarily on that front. Coming out of this, one of the things that we can do is I'd like to do, there are a number of businesses that haven't engaged yet. We'd like to do some one-on-ones with. haven't seen the owner of Nana's at ease. I'd like to, I'd like to also talk to the Franklins, Chowder Bowl. Talk to a few more business owners just to inform them and hear from them. So we could do some one-on-ones, because it's not a large geographic area. I have had conversations with the new owners of Sylvia Beach. They're aware, but I'm going to double back, because they're not sure. The last time we talked, we didn't have timing sorted out.
Who are the new owners?
They own the, it's the same folks that own the Inn at Night Beach. It's VIP Hospitality.
Oh.
John Lee is
the
person.
Yeah, yeah.
They also,
he bought the bayfront.
Yeah, he owns the property on the bayfront where he wants to do that hotel down there too. Yeah.
What piece of ground are we talking about?
The Inn at Night Beach,
right.
That hotel bought Sylvia Beach Hotel, and they have the bayfront that they bought that they haven't built yet.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
So,
is anything on the tap house? On any news on that?
I don't know exactly. Yeah, that's all I know.
For 2.9.
I know. I mean,
it's sitting there for a while for that.
And we did briefly talk about that, the tap house and the parking lot that the tap house has, because that parking goes with the restaurant use.
Right.
And the environmental issues that are subsurface that impact that property, which are going to be an issue. It's parking stays the parking lot. So that was an industrial laundry.
Right. With the tap house being, I know the number that he threw out selling that parking lot before was pretty high.
Well, it was offered.
I've been pushing it. Derek said they won't touch it.
No.
Huh?
No. Well, I've got one of our policymakers right here. No, it's just.
Not
it's an unknown liability. You buy a portion of the liability of that environmental issue down there, and it's an open question just of how extensive it is.
So you might have to dig
it up. The DEQ file does say it's bad enough that you can't have residential or commercial occupancy on that property until it's addressed. But a parking lot's okay, because people aren't staying in a parking lot for hours on end. So it's just a liability that could be...
that the city doesn't want to take on.
Right, whereas a private party, they can make those judgments, you know? So, but what we do is we have those conversations. We start to frame this up. This needs to go into a fee resolution, as you know, that goes in front of council. So the council will ultimately have to put in place that, you know, yes, this is what we're going to charge for the permits, and this is what we're going to charge in the turnaround on a couple case issues down there. And then that's it. The rest of it's fully budgeted, and we'll just chug along.
And I know the bigger concern I hear, and I watched the last few meetings online over the last couple of days to try to get caught up too, and there was mention of it. And I'd be concerned is too with the boundary area, when and if that's going to be considered for pay too in the future. Because I think the turnaround, I can see that. That's an easy one, especially you're not really touching anything else except for some short-term rentals. But in 1-2 years from now, if all of a sudden we want to do the rest of that boundary, then I think if that's not addressed or considered early on, I think that's going to be a big issue.
If we were doing more than just a turnaround, or we're not doing anything right now, but we're gone to that point where we're talking about it, if we were doing more than a turnaround, I don't know if I'd be in favor.
But in some of the previous meetings that I wasn't here for, it was talked about.
Right. I think the key issue here is starting at someplace, and then this committee would be overseeing how expansive it is. Does prices need to adjust to locations? You know, do you expand it? Do you shrink it? That's sort of the as a policymaker, that's what I envision handing this off to the committee is for you guys to go over that and say, like, a year from now, oh, everyone's parking on those non-time streets now, and the residents are complaining, maybe we should put the time limits in, or maybe we should put meters in, or whatever. You know, maybe at some point other lots get meters. Who knows? I think that that's for this committee to sort of examine, to debate, and then make a recommendation.
That's been my biggest issue in going at Night Beach is it's there's so many different issues here, so many different businesses, residents.
Tourists.
I'm having a hard time with supporting Night Beach, of doing this. because of all the different aspects of it. I am in favor of doing a turnaround because we need the money for the infrastructure. That's the biggest wear and tear, and the people that use it should pay for it.
Right, and it's a high
That's
use.
The same attitude I had on the Bayfront.
Yeah, highly in demand spot.
Highly in demand spot. We don't have the money. Parking lots aren't even ADD compliant. I mean, realistically, if that was to be enforced, they could shut those parking lots down because they're not ADD.
We have a hard time getting ADA compliance all over the city because of very difficult.
But I'm just saying hypothetically it could happen, but it probably won't. But I have a daughter in a wheelchair. You know, I'm very sensitive to that. And we have areas in our parking area that she can't use. And these things need to be changed.
Yep.
And we have to come up with revenue to do that.
So next, gentlemen, I said as the budget. Let me just bring this up. You'll be able to see how some of this stuff is.
Would it be out of line to, like, take feedback from 4.1 from the guests? Now, or you want to wait?
I would wait until after we have the budget because they may want to speak to some of those components too.
Okay.
It won't take too long. Well, we'll certainly reserve plenty of time for public.
And this is rolling into the budget too, but I know Robert asked last meeting about did we ever get the numbers of what the business license parking fee is yearly that would be getting canceled?
Yeah, I have the total collections on the budget sheet here, okay. But it's what? It's 100, 150, and 250 scalable, depending on whether or not you provide any off-street parking. That's how it is set up right now. But I just have the grand total in here so that of what would be going away. Let's see, let me just go ahead and do that.
There should be coffee. Well, I didn't make it.
I went and I got checked here in the next week or so, they should be done.
I have glasses now. I'm like, what? You know,
I have to wear glasses to eat dinner and watch TV. Like, if I take, he's a blur.
Have you had LASIK?
No. I went from 2010 to 2030. And it's falling off really fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to wear them. Like, nighttime, really bad drive. I need that. That's why I've been doing most of my stuff from visually. You know,
yeah.
I don't want to drive at night.
My parents don't drive at night either.
Yeah.
I'm getting to the point where I don't think I'm going to be able to drive at night very much longer.
Did you say it was a Canadian firm?
T2, yeah, they have, well, they're Canadian and U.S. both. So depending on the component or person we're dealing with,
yes.
We're either dealing with somebody in Vancouver, B.C., or in Atlanta, Georgia. So it's the two locations. All right, so this is a budget worksheet that we have a boilerplate for. I just completed this and
there's pictures in the middle of it.
Anyway, let me just kind of run through things here really quick with you. I zoomed it up so you could see it. Now, look, that's fiscal year 22-23. The reason you're looking at that, that's before we implemented anything. So that's what the program was before we did anything on the Bayfront. And you see three categories of fees, fee in lieu Nye Beach, fee in lieu City Center, which is DECO, and fee in lieu Bayfront, okay? Those were the business license surcharges that had been in place for a number of years when we were doing the parking districts, and the council elected to keep in place until they're replaced by this type of program. So the one in the Bayfront's gone now. That $13,125 went away, and you'll see it as I go over towards the current fiscal year. The Nye Beach one, which was low that year, but we had pandemic issues coming out of over $8,000 is pretty typical, has been, and that's the amount that would go away. So the meter.
Can you move column D smaller so we don't have to necessarily see the names, or move the account number so that we can see.
Oh, the account number.
Yeah, just hide ABC. Okay.
That help?
Yeah.
Okay, so 23-24, that's 2 months of implementation on the Bayfront. Remember, we did May and June. That was the end of that fiscal year. E-permit figures were relatively large because a lot of people got their permits right off the bat. When we offered annual permits, in some circumstances, that's when they got them. Meter revenue was modest just over those two periods. What I'm showing in column H, this the current year budget and what our budget estimate was. As you see, the line right here for we didn't assume any business license surcharges because they went away in the Bayfront because we had implemented the meters. We assumed about $350,000 in meter revenue and $50,000 in e-permit revenue. I'm going to skip past the amended budget because it doesn't really matter. At our six-month mark, actuals, our parking ticket revenue is just under $20,000. We still had the fee in lieu for Nye Beach is paid right when business licenses renew, so that's all been paid for the year. That's why it shows up on the six-month actual. Same with the DECO district. And then meter revenues at about $150,000 and e-permit about $26,000. So our estimate for the end of the year at this point, well, we don't expect a whole lot more parking tickets being issued because we don't have parking enforcement just yet. But there will be a little bit before the end of the fiscal year, so it'll probably bump up to about $24,000 or so. We're not going to have anything else from Nye Beach businesses. That $8,100 is what it is for this fiscal year. Same with City Center. We expect meter revenue to be about $300,000 and e-permit revenue to be about $53,000. So we're a little bit below what we thought. Our budget was $440,000, we're $380,000, and then, you know, that'll change, obviously. We're estimating where we're going to end. Part of that, again, gets at the policy choice to eat the fees, and so that did have an impact there. Now, what I put together for the upcoming year includes the Nye Beach implementation. So you have in the yellow for the upcoming year, you have the parking tickets, $35,000. The $8,100 goes away in Nye Beach, the business license surcharge. I do need to be clear with businesses, though. That doesn't mean your business license renewal goes away. It's the surcharge that goes away.
So does that mean you're anticipating the Nye Beach turnaround parking bringing in $11,000?
That's going to be down here, and I'll cover that in just a moment.
Okay.
But that my suspicion is that the businesses, I mean, we're paying that surcharge, may choose to just use those funds to buy a permit. They want to exceed the three-hour limit or whatever. So I came up with a couple different revenue options about the turnaround, and that's what I have on the white here. So I'm going to go over.
Are you estimating every business needing a permit? Because, for instance, my business, we have a private lot. I don't have to.
Nope. Okay. Okay. No. I actually was relatively modest on that. I think for the residential permits, I'm assuming about 70. Like I said, we had 92 on file with finance, but I don't know what that's. I mean, I think there's some old ones in there and whatnot. I'm thinking maybe 70 is probably a more realistic number. At $35 a pop for the year, you're looking at about 24, 50. Commercial permits, I'm assuming, I think it was like 45. Shrink this back down for a minute to see the rest of my notes. 45 at 35 a month, with 25 we choose to go for a $300 annual. So that's $9,500. And then the lodging permits, I'm assuming a dozen a week throughout the year. It's about $5,700. And then for purposes of the turnaround, two different pricings, at $1.25 an hour, assuming 90% occupancy on the weekends during the peak period, and 70% occupancy Monday through Friday during the peak period, and then just 70% occupancy on the weekends off-peak, is how I ran the numbers. You're looking at, if we go $1 an hour, $69,000 and change, $1.25 an hour, you're looking at $86,000 and change. So that got baked into the meter fees, which includes Bayfront and Nye Beach, going from about $300,000 to $370,000 a year, and the permit fees, which include Bayfront and Nye Beach, going from $53,000 to about $70,000 a year. Does that make sense? I mean, it's not going to be 100% accurate, but giving you a ballpark, and it gives you a sense of the proportions, too. And that will generate enough for us to begin to tackle these projects.
What question?
You'd be looking at a little over $100,000 a year. Now, remember, I'll go through the expenses. We've got $100,000 a year is our parking enforcement. And then you get into some of the other stuff. Yeah, Gary.
So what if is a possibility of doing Nye Beach, like you say, seasonal and not doing anything there in the off season at all?
Our preference would be not to do that because of the issues with the pay stations being shut off for that period of time. Instead, what we would do is just run them on the weekends like we do on the Bayfront. Do the same thing. And that way they can continue to get their updates and software stuff. And we know they're operational when we need them.
Can we run them on a reduced rate for the weekends and the off season?
Potentially. We didn't do that on the Bayfront. It gets it at programming.
The off season on the Nye Beach?
It's only.
From what I mean, I don't
spend. My thought would be just go with $1 an hour instead of $1.25.
Yeah. I mean, right.
The Bayfront's $1.
Bayfront's $1.
Right. I would rather go a buck.
Yeah.
$1.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I mean, I don't spend a lot of time down there, so I'm not real super familiar with it. But I do know when you go down there in the wintertime, the parking lots are mostly empty in the off season. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're gaining anything.
There's plenty of street parking.
There's
plenty of street parking, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a turnover. We're not trying to turn people over.
I spend time there too. I drive through there in the winter and the summer, and it is kind of a weather dependent. If you have nice weather on the weekend and in the winter, it's going to be packed.
But here's the deal: if there's nobody there in the winter, they won't park down there. They'll park on the street.
That's my point.
I'm trying to think if I've ever parked in the turnaround. Not once.
I take the dogs to the beach all the time. So.
Yeah,
well,
but
we don't need to because we live there.
Right. But as a resident,
I've seen that whole thing on the weekend when the weather's nice in the winter, it can be fuller. I think there's a pro and a con to running it seasonally. And I kind of think it should be all weekends, all year long, just like it is at the Bayfront for the prime real estate. Personally, I think that in the winter, there's the three things we're looking at accomplishing here, and demand management's not one of those things in the winter. But the revenue part, for maintaining the parking lot itself and the traffic enforcement still is a part of mm-hmm. of that. That's why I'm personally in favor of having that be there at peak demand in the winter, which is, you know, weekends.
And nothing during the week.
And nothing during the week in the off season. Yeah.
And that's how I had this program in here was
and I think that
Saturday, Sunday, November to April, which is what we're doing on the Bayfront. And then 7 days a week, May to October. And then $1 and $1.25.
But I think the big issue is if you turn them off, there's software, hardware, maintenance issues. So
it does become.
It does become. I mean, I think that the cost benefit for turning them off.
I'm feeling if we're going to run them year round, like on the weekends, and you know, then it should be $1 instead of $1.25.
That's fine. You got pricing here, and you know, you're looking at about $70,000 in off the turnaround and $87,000 total in that kind of ballpark.
But you're going to make up some of that.
And that's compared on the Bayfront, you're looking at 350. So it maintains a proportionality. I mean, this is a smaller scale area, but you still have parking congestion. It's just parking congestion in a smaller area. And that generates some funds to deal with Night Beach parking's needs, so it's not all coming out of meter revenue from the Bayfront.
Gotcha.
What's the activity at the Visual Arts Center on the weekends?
I don't know.
Probably good. Probably, yeah. If you would like to know directly about some of these things,
we do want to know. He was saying to wait till after we review.
Yeah, let me just run through the balance of this budget. It's not that much.
Okay.
More data here, real quick. See.
But don't forget anything you want to say.
Are we going to get cut off at 7:30?
No.
Okay.
No, we just run this.
No, unfortunately, you're not.
All right, let me just kind of run through that's the revenue side of it. The gist of it on that I'm looking at here, you're looking at this is what it takes to support a parking enforcement person.
81,000.
So you assume their wages are just about 50,000, 47 and change, but then you've got overtime considerations which come into play from time to time, insurance, FICA, PERS. You walk through the whole battery of stuff here, unemployment insurance, it's about 81,000, yeah.
That's
for one parking enforcement person.
47,000?
That's their salary. Now, for purposes of the budget, we
but
have...
they're not just doing Night Beach, they're doing all the city. That's not just for Night Beach. Huh?
I think he's complaining the salary is low.
Oh, it's low.
I mean, I'm making like 50 grand a year right now, and that's barely enough to have a nice night.
So...
it is low.
Very
if I need to adjust
Newport,
that,
that's 43%. Newport.
Look, I didn't have a chance to confirm. I'm working off of the prior budget and escalating. I can talk to Jason to see what they ended up offering him that. But the point is you know you're in that 80 to 100,000 for the parking enforcement officer, one position to do this work. Now then we get into the other expenses, professional services. This figure at 30,000. Those are our contracts with the vendor. Those are the contracts to ensure that the software stays updated in the pay stations, that they make the improvements to the mobile pay, the e-permitting side, the maintenance of that side, all of that. The financial professional services, the $50,000, that's the fee that the vendors are that the banks are taking. That's, you know, so, you know, every time you do a bank transaction, the bank's going to have a cut. That's the merchant.
Why are you calling it financial professional service?
That's where our finance.
Why do you call it fees?
Bank fees?
I'm going to talk to them about that because usually financial professional services is our auditing expenses.
Yeah, it sounds like
so
a person.
I'm going to ask them to break it out so that we don't have auditing get dumped in there.
Yeah.
Because what you're looking at, it really is the fees.
Yeah, well, if it's really just the fees,
yeah.
If it's really just the fees, because what,
right.
It shouldn't, the person who's doing that for the mm-hmm. city should not be in this budget, just the mm-hmm. fees should.
So vehicle expenses, equipment expenses. We don't necessarily use all of the equipment. The equipment expenses would be if we had to replace a pay station or two because it got damaged. So it may or may not get used in a given year, depending on what's going on.
Which we had to do on the vehicle.
We had to repair one of them. With it had a modem issue, actually, the one on Fall Street. I'm not sure which one you're
thinking. The one in front of the Bay Haven?
Front of Bay Haven, yeah. That modem failed. The vehicle expenses, I mean, we have one vehicle for license plate recognition. It has to be maintained, that kind of junk. Infrastructure expenses, we have that there for signage, poles, ticket, that kind of thing. Insurance, standard. Communication would be, well, AT&T. I mean, these things all communicate, so that's where that goes. Office supplies, paper largely. So those are your paper rolls coming out of the handheld by parking enforcement when they issue tickets. That's what's coming out of your vending machines as a receipt. So traffic safety and signage, that's if we want to make changes. Uniform allowance, pretty typical. Other data processing was some upfront issues with the Bayfront installation that are going to go away. So that should be a modest account.
So yeah. That was running cable? Running data?
Yeah, that was some of the implementation stuff that ended up getting in there. Services, that's overhead. The city always puts in there services provided by general fund. So this requires time from our finance department and things of that nature, and therefore that's accounted for on that line item. The interfund loans paying back over a number of years on the Bayfront, the $250,000 that we borrowed out of the Aggie Beach Closure Fund to resurface those three lots on the Bayfront. And I'm plugging in $200,000 to transfer to capital projects, one of which would be on the Bayfront to deal with abandoned, we've talked about this, abandoned driveway approaches and some of those sections of sidewalk that aren't working well, like over by Port Dock 3, the port parking lot down there, and it's got that big, wide area where it's kind of hard to tell where the approach is and whether or not you can park on the street or not. So it's one comprehensive project to clean up a lot of that stuff on both sides of Bay Boulevard. And then the other is a $50,000 set aside for that back lot, at least begin to fund that. Because if we can put it in capital, then we can build that over a couple of years and get enough money to do the job. Or if we have room tax dollars that we can tap into and the lawyers say it's okay, we may be able to pull some of that in too. But. And then you have contingency and reserves. So that's where we're at.
Seems high. That $200,000 seems kind of high to me.
To redo the back lots, probably.
Well, that's the back lot in of itself, so about 100.
Right.
Okay.
The sidewalk work down on the Bayfront, we figure, is going to be probably about 150.
Because the back lot would be expensive. I was just thinking about the sidewalk work.
Well, the challenge we run into on some of those, though, Gary, is as soon as we touch the curbs, we start to get into the structured stormwater that's along there. So then we're moving catch basins and doing some of that work to fix it all up.
I mean, now, I know the lots are expensive.
But we picked the easy lots down on the Bayfront, that didn't have drainage issues, that we didn't have to get into. As soon as we start having to rip out catch basins and move that stuff around, it starts to get pretty expensive.
No, I know the lots are expensive. I didn't know the curbing was that much.
Everything on the construction side right now has been pretty expensive.
Okay.
So that's what I had budget-wise. I hope that all made sense. And that's all I had to cover on that item. If you want to take public comment now,
Jim. Well, I'm just curious if the committee has any questions about the volunteers and the VAC, because we have Cassie.
I think that I want to hear from everybody's here.
Right.
All of it. I mean, I love that people wrote letters. It's so incredibly helpful. We've been saying in our meetings that we need more people to show up and to give comments, because we can only talk about what each of our experience is.
No, so, Night Beach especially.
Well, and
we're all Bayfront.
Yeah, I mean, you guys
most,
are there.
You know, a couple of us.
And, you're there now, but you are both brand new to brand this new. Meeting. So, yeah, so glad you're here. So, yeah, we can just open it up to public comment. Go ahead.
I'm going to try to make sure I don't go too long here, but I mean, I just would like to kind of speak to the use of the parking lot as our windows. That's our main view. We are looking at Nye Beach turnaround all the time. This time of year, we want more people coming to that parking lot and visiting the spaces that we have. This time of year, charging people to go down there and deterring any local people from coming into the building is detrimental to my budget. And so I kind of want to make sure that this committee understands the nature of our building and our access points. We are three stories. We have three different entry levels. And our main entrance is down on the bottom. If we desire for our building to be accessible to anyone, regardless of income level, we really try to pay attention to financial barriers and make sure that people aren't deterred. I have resisted over and over again having any admittance fee. That's very intentional with our values as an organization and our service to the community. The idea that there is limited parking in the upper parking lots but only paid down in the bottom is problematic to the way that we direct people through our building. So most of the time our upper doors are locked if we do not have staff to welcome people in, and that's for security purposes. We don't want someone walking in and walking back out without ever seeing staff. The nature of our building is always transition. So instructors bring work in and out of the building all the time. People who rent the building bring materials in and out of the building all the time. We have exhibits on all three levels that are always changing and requires a lot of load in and load out. I would like to speak to the loading zone. There definitely needs to be a loading zone. The pay to park or how long that loading is, when we are installing in our Runyon Gallery on the bottom level, a lot of people come and they're dropping off work and staying for a day plus to install their work. So those people, you know, they need a place to position their vehicle to do that. But the same is true for our other entrances. Like they need to be, when the parking enforcement individual was active before, we have vehicles that have to back up to our second level and our third level for the same load in and load out. And those people were being questioned repeatedly by the parking enforcement about, you can't be here. Okay, but it's the nature of what our building is used for, and it makes it not a great experience. It's just part of what we do. So I just wanted to kind of explain what is going on there. And then just like the impacts of the decisions here and how they impact in like community involvement and participation into our programming is important. If the city's goal is to like have this asset in such a wonderful location, and we want to increase quality of life for our residents and for tourists alike, we need those people to be able to access our building. And I specifically have been focusing on programming around community events in the off season. And so I just would like to, I think you probably read it in your notes, but in the off season, we have the Pushpin Show and we have the Member Show. The number of people that are attending those events, that's a triumph. Those are things that, like, we're so excited about. What we have heard so far about, I mean, like, this, I just found out about this very recently. This is a shock to me. I'm really surprised that there's information that Sylvia Beach knows about this, because their construction team, their project manager, was completely clueless that this was coming. And I'd like to note on their behalf that their opening date is the same date that this is supposed to be rolled out. So communication is really, really key. Like as I'm thinking about my budgets, it's concerning to me that I have to think about the possibility that my income is going to drop or my participation in the building is going to drop, and that I need to anticipate that, like, being really conservative in my budget. I'm saddened by that because the community has really come together to support the arts. There has been wonderful participation. I would hate to see that go in another direction. One of the things is, you know, moving forward, if we do passes, permits down in the turnaround, so yes, okay, if you're using the back, you can still do that by doing this permit. I just would like to say that we are a staff of 2.5 people. So any additional navigating a whole new system like that for 2.5 people and our ability to do that, it would be a strain on our already stressed staff. But I would like to say that would be super important that they would be able, that there would be permits that could be generously shared both in our upper parking lot and our lower parking lot, because we need to be able to access that lower parking lot. So the events that I mentioned before, those are all community members packing artwork into the building. So if we say, well, you know, the upper ones are just timed and you can get in that way, but if anyone's ever been in a wheelchair and been in our building, like, you to think that you're going to carry your artwork and go down that set of stairs is just, it's not realistic. So people need to be able to get through to that part. And then I was just kind of curious about, like, the business license fees, like, where some of those permits, where some of those dollars fall coming out of our budget, and how I plan for those. Like, if my staff, if we have parking spots for our staff in addition, are those things that we are going to be charged for? And then I just would like to point also that our operations are based on 4 hours, not 3 hours. So for us to change, like, our shifts that we do, our open hours are 4 hours for our staff, for our volunteers, for our rentals are a minimum of 4 hours. And so anytime someone is doing that, it's just, it's a transition that we would need to make. It would make for more than a higher need of number of permits that we would have to get. But we do probably around 60 events a year. We desire for that number to grow. And so just figuring out how do we do that logistically with the change it's going to be a learning curve. But I just really, I would really just discourage anything that discourages people from coming there in the off season. We're just so fortunate, the number of participants that we've had. At our last gallery opening, I'm just going to use this as an example. At our last gallery opening, we had 275 people that came through in a 3-hour time period. That's in the off season, like, yay! But we've heard again and again people that are like, well, I don't go to the, you know, I don't go down to the bayfront anymore because I don't want to pay to park. And just the assumption that people have the ability to pay with their phone, or if they have questions or if they have hardships. I'm also a little concerned about people coming into our building needing help, or we are a city building, like, coming in and having an expectation that we're going to be able to walk them through this, when that's just not what we're designed for, and we have limited staff hours anyway. So I like how we navigate that. I'm sure there's a learning curve, and as people get more comfortable with it, but we have a very large number of people that they don't have handicap parking spots, but there's a lot of elderly people that come into our building that, I mean, we see it all the time when we try to, you know, if we're sharing promotional sorts of things where there's a QR code, we hear it all the time. Oh, I don't do that. My phone doesn't do that. So if people have those difficulties, I mean, it's real. So I hope that they would have access, because those same people that may have problems accessing the thing by their phone are the same people that are not going to be able to park in our parking lot upstairs and make it all the way down to the bottom of the building and then to go back out. So,
I mean, obviously, my feedback on a couple of those things. Did you want to build a GoFundMe?
Could we have the participants who are speaking please identify themselves? Since this is being recorded, for anybody to look at, it would help to know who's doing the talking. Thank you.
My name is Chelsea Davidson. I'm the director at the Visual Arts Center.
Chelsea, I feel like I'm really grateful that you brought all of those points up, and I think that they're all really reasonable and that they're already kind of what we're thinking in terms of things we've already covered today. For example, the whole system should be accessible to everyone, not just people with a cell phone who could, you know, text or whatever. In terms of the codes, this system is easy to preset codes, to pre-whatever. I mean, you could, in your marketing, say the pushpin show, the code for parking is going to be pushpin. And that could be in your marketing materials. And so that could tell people, like, you don't have to pay to come. Additionally, that the system, and he can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm just hallucinating on these things, but additionally, it could bring in more marketing because he can send a text out to everybody or a message out to everybody saying, hey, if you're coming to Newport, there's a pushpin show and you can get there for free. You can park for free. You know, like the reach, the possible reach for marketing is even bigger for the events if that happens.
And it would be up to this committee's decision for that to be honored to the full extent that we need it. I mean, like, at what?
This
how
is
will
just
that
a discussion.
Honored? Yeah.
Just a couple more things, if I can, real
yeah,
just
no,
before I lose them in my brain. But the other thing is, like, again, we didn't have a lot of these issues on the Bayfront because there weren't a lot of like free museums or and that kind of thing on the Bayfront with these needs. But I would love to see something like within the city policy that it's, if it's a museum, if it's an art gallery, if it's something like that, it has a different set of allowances in terms of the codes or for the events or something like that. Maybe it's just like, I don't know, whatever it ends up being, we should make events free. Like if the event is free and it's in a museum, it should be as close to being free as it can be for people to actually get to it, I feel like.
What we do have is the opportunity, because we're building the budget for the upcoming year too, and working with, because this is a city facility, I mean, we want it to be successful too. But we're juggling all these other competing demands, but we have a way to kind of navigate that. We can build into the room tax budget some funding for covering the cost of the free comp codes, and that just gets built into budget that gets.
But you can also turn it off. I mean, on those big events that are big.
It would have to be more than a day, because it's hard to deal with that with the vendor on a one day turnaround, shutting things off and turning things back on.
But can't you plan it?
Well, it could be for like a show that's going to go on a weekend, right?
If for some reason it was a one day thing, we had problems with coupon codes, we just wouldn't run code enforcement down there. But we're not going to shut machines off. We ran into that issue on the Bayfront. That's just, and then you've got the text to pay.
I just know that in the planning a long time ago, we had talked about if we had a weekend that it was like free parking weekend or some kind
of. Worst case, you could get a cover for it almost. Free parking today. Just throw it over there.
Yeah, there are ways to do that. Or you put an A-frame sign out there.
Right.
That says free parking and deal with it that way. But we generally try to avoid the vendor coordination things getting tricky sometimes.
Yeah.
Here's another thought I actually had going to this, making it accessible. Would it be possible, from your perspective and from ours technically, to say if you go to the VAC, you can get 2 hours of free parking at that lot.
Yeah, like a validation.
Yeah. Or, you know, because that would actually encourage people to go into the VAC to get their validation, and then they look around, maybe they buy a piece of art, or they donate, or they just enjoy it, and then maybe go back out and have, a bowl of soup at the Charter Bowl, or sit on the beach for a little bit or something. would you think that's desirable, and is that something that we as
a... Well, the challenge is what she's saying. If there's two employees, how are they, we're now putting them responsible for validating 200 tickets?
Well, I mean, on an opening reception time, that would be...
But, if it's
like under a normal...
Yeah. You just display
it. Exactly.
Right. If it's a code, you
if
just
it's a code,
display
you
it.
Just display it on the counter. You
and
know, nobody
just go
needs
back
to say
and type
anything.
It in, right?
It's just in a frame on the counter.
You
can, changes weekly.
Or you could put that on your A-frame sign and have a slot where you slide it in.
Yeah.
Say if you're coming here for this event today,
I would just say, like, yes, but... It would come with hiccups with individuals who are not savvy to doing that. And those questions would be, but I want it to help me to figure out how to do it. And I mean, you'd hope for a minimum number of it, but it would exist. And I know it would because of the demographic that frequents our facility.
Right.
A lot of people would be just fine with it, but there would be times. And so at larger events, it would be a challenge to navigate, but it's not undoable. But
are most of your shows on the off season or during the peak season?
We have shows all throughout the year, but our emphasis has been in my time there. Our emphasis has been very much on local artists, and we have been growing our events in the off season. So right now we have a fiber festival that's going on, which was specifically directed to creating interest and appeal during the off season. And that was, that was the event where our numbers were just massive. Our numbers were so huge I couldn't even address the group because there were so many people throughout the building. And so there's been a lot of public support for that. I just, in situations like that, some people who know how to navigate the building will park in the upper parking lot, but it's been like so exciting to see sometimes when we have openings where the turnaround is just like full of people coming in all at once, like during our open time. And getting back to like the maintenance of the turnaround, one of the things that I think is really important, people are paying to park in the place, and I mean, it's city run, and I'm sure this is a city priority all the time anyway, but it's like safety of the space. And I just would like to acknowledge that I have seen it again and again and again of there being ice, black ice on the turnaround directly in front of the Visual Arts Center. There is some sort of leak, so even if it's bone dry out, we will have black ice. A woman fell and hurt her head really bad, but the response to maintaining the safety of that space is not adequate, to the point that I have been gifted a bucket of salt so that I can go out there and try to de-ice it, because that's important. One other point I would like to make, this is just so that you all know that this is happening, but as part of monies allocated from the Public Arts Committee, 10 muralists will be working in the Nye Beach area between 3rd Street and the turnaround. 10 murals are being installed on those walls this summer. Some of them will be working like on the bathroom, the front of the bathroom, and up the bottom part of the stairwell, and some of them will be working from the top down. So some of the things that I saw, the walls, like the inside walls are the parts that will have the mural on them. So hopefully that's not like, those people would obviously need permits so that they can park in the appropriate place to reach the spot that they're working on, but... Anyway, that was my other concern about like making sure we have permits of like we have this work coming in for that city space. And the goal of that too is to make sure that the space is a little bit more cared for. In my time there, I haven't ever witnessed like city presence in our gardens or we do a lot of the garbage cleanup around the building ourselves. So yes, there's a need for more concentrated effort down there.
That's one of the problems this has. We don't have the money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's what this is supposed to do.
One of the challenges.
You don't have money.
Yeah.
And like he was saying with the tourism dollars, in my opinion, the tourism dollars should be paying for that stuff.
Right.
You know, some of that. So, though this does bring more funds to those issues. I know for the on the Bayfront as well, like stuff wasn't being taken care of and maintained, and they were able to. I know the tourism dollars paid for some of that cleanup this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have the tourism, as you know, we have the tourism promotion bucket, and then the portion that can be used.
So I mean, I'm very sympathetic to that down there. I think I'm going to express that periodically here tonight. That what we need to have free for your volunteers, and we need a loading zone.
Yeah, and also in the diagrams.
And we need to become ADA.
And in the diagrams of the diagrams for the handicap spots, Robert shared those with me. I was able to see those. Right now, there is a handicap spot on the second one, but not up on the upper parking lot. So on the lower parking lot, there is one that's not like properly painted or anything,
it's not proper in terms of its grades. Or
yeah,
we had civil West engineering look at both lots,
but there still really needs to be a handicap spot on that middle level, because anyone who's doing a rental, we have a rental there every Sunday morning, and they only access that building through the second level. If you do not have, if you don't have a spot there, you only have one up above, and you have to, the grade of the hill. I mean,
we just have to be careful. There are legal ramifications. Our city engineer can take a look at it, but there are legal ramifications if we stripe any ADA spaces where we clearly know that it's not accessible.
Well,
somebody hurts themselves, yeah. Now the city's liable because we put in an ADA space in an inappropriate location where they couldn't navigate.
There is a spot that's there. Mm-hmm. I'm saying it's got a sign, but there's not any of the painting. So it's
right.
Also problematic enforcement-wise, because
right.
People don't see the striping, and they park there, and they've been ticketed.
So there's no painting in the space.
There's no painting in that space, and I know that that's what
it's got
started.
The blue handicap
it
sign.
Just has a blue
yeah.
handicap
yeah.
sign.
Yeah.
It's kind of a way you can't see it, but... As far as like building accessibility, it's equally important that there's access from the second floor. I mean, it's just because it's built on a hillside, our ability to get to all the spaces is a problem.
Yeah. We'll have an opportunity to do some more work with the Oregon Coast Council of the Arts on this kind of stuff. And like I said, I think we have some potential solutions to these issues. It is change. We'll have to navigate change.
Mm-hmm.
But we've done that on the Bayfront too, and it's an evolving learning curve as we go through, and it's
never stopped.
We make adjustments where we have to.
Is there other public comment that wants to be? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to, if I could.
Can you just identify yourself?
Sure.
Yeah, name it.
Brian Rose, and I am a resident of Nine Beach since 2002. And I live a couple doors down from Sylvia Beach on 3rd Street, which is one of your assigned stall locations, according to this current map. what I'm curious about is the insistence on charging residents that live in that area a $35 annual fee to park, and then ask us to move our car every 72 hours. One of the reasons I chose to live in the area is it's very walkable. And so I park my car, and it sits for a week. So now what you're asking me to do is pay a $35 fee for the joy of getting out and moving my car every 72 hours.
Are you currently parking it in a three-hour spot? Or on?
Well, I actually have one of these 92 passes that, I can tell you why there's 92 of them. It's because all the VRBO owners have gotten guest passes for all of their renters. That's why you have 92. You do not have 92 residents living full-time in Nye Beach.
Yeah.
right? There's two people that live on Northwest 3rd Street, myself and one other, that live there full time. The rest are VRBO homes. Mm-hmm. And all of those passes...
Wow, really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And there's only two businesses on Northwest 3rd. So I think you need to rethink your approach for full-time residents in the Nye Beach area. Mm-hmm. I would also recommend you take a look at Don Davis Park, which happens to be a parking lot that people pull into and park all day long.
Mm-hmm. Business the same way.
Yeah. So I think I had the question too about the 72 hours, but my understanding is it's complaint driven, so most cars aren't going to be, you know, if they're not obviously not abandoned, they're not going to.
That's not what this policy says.
Well, I understand the policy says 72 hours.
We've had 72 hours in effect for years.
I think it was.
Since you've been here, it's been under 72 hours.
Doesn't say that on the signs.
No, we don't.
Yeah, it's just a part of the ordinance.
It gives our code enforcement staff the ability to deal with derelict vehicles.
Right.
Okay, so now according to this, though, they will enforce it. Is that correct?
They'll be enforcing 72 hours just as they are right now.
Which is a complaint driven.
I'm not sure I can believe that. Now that you put this in place, the policy in place, I'm not sure that they will just say, I'm not going to enforce it.
Is there any way that we can...
Well, in the software... on the car, is it tracking how long that vehicle has been there for the 72 hours?
If the LPD drive through that with the LPR, they'll ping it and track it.
I mean, is that something that's being tracked?
They did that all summer.
Right.
In Nye Beach.
Right, but they weren't doing anything about that. Like, you can make rules for those things, right?
Well, like I said, 72 hours, you know, we've had that on the books for decades, and it's used for code enforcement purposes for dealing with derelict vehicles. So
isn't there a difference between a derelict vehicle and
a residential car?
Of course, but that's, I think what he's saying is that it's not being, that is not being used to have residential vehicles like yours move. It's there so that they can... get rid of derelict vehicles.
But I understand where he's coming from. I mean, I actually feel like there should be some kind of, as a resident, I don't know how we do that. We debate that.
Because it is a code for, and from my experience, I can tell you, it's 72 hours is basically in almost every city in America, a code enforcement issue. It's not a...
I'm not having a problem with the 72 hours. I'm having a problem with... him living on there and worried about his car getting towed.
Right.
I mean, it should be some kind of safeguard. That's the thing about Nye Beach that I've always been kind of scared of, you know, even going down this path of Nye Beach.
I want to say, Nye Beach is not the marina.
I get that, but we do have a high-use area that needs to be maintained, and we don't have the money to do it.
So we have to come up with a way to turn around. To look at that, but I'm not sure that the residential streets along Nye Beach are appropriate.
Well, you guys took the approach of trying to price the residential one very low. Well.
But I also feel like we should be able to somehow guarantee that we can. I don't know how to do this. I'm not techie like you are. Mm-hmm. He is. But it seems like to me that we need to be able to come up with a way to be able to track his residence permit that you can tell it's a resident permit, okay? So a way to track that. He's not under the threat of getting his car towed.
Well, if you have a resident permit, that's going to be a record.
But if it's over there, right now the way the policy is, 72 hours, it could get towed.
So if the LPR, I'm not sure, the LPR recognizes that it's a resident permit, so we could easily tell it, then they're allowed to park there indefinitely.
Yeah.
So we could just
that's fair. You could do that. But keep in mind, this is not a private driveway. We're talking about a limited number of on-street parking spaces in these areas. And it's not
a driveway.
Somebody said that
his parking spot is in front of his house because he doesn't have a driveway.
Right.
So,
which is the case with the businesses and homes all over the place down there.
What would you like to say?
Even in the non-permit areas where you're parking...
I have the solution for this, and it's really, really simple. Residents that, homeowners, actual homeowners that don't have a driveway, they're paying property taxes and a whole lot of them.
Oh, yes.
All you need to do is issue stickers that they put on their car, just like Pebble Beach does. You have a Pebble Beach resident sticker, and that's how you get access into that town, because it's a gated thing, and if you're a tourist, you pay. So that, I think, would be really easy, no tax needed. Whoever is paying property taxes gets that sticker for their car, just like a registration sticker. Or even if you didn't want a sticker, you can have something hanging from the windshield.
But there's a problem with that, and I see where you're going. I'm not against the idea. But does the recognition system going to be able to pick that up?
Well, but the cop driving by, he's got eyeballs, right? He can see that sticker. You have it so that, okay, you're going to put the sticker in such and such location on every single car. And if the sticker is there, the parking...
See, the problem, we have one parking enforcement person, that has to cover the whole city.
One
question
I have.
They can't get out and look at every vehicle, or they'll never get anything done.
If you're driving down the road, and that sticker, let's say you make it bright green or something, and you're going to stick that on wherever you guys think that it would be better. You know, to me, it makes sense. It's low tech. And we're not talking about a huge number of people here. You're talking about Nye Beach, where many places don't have driveways. We're paying huge property taxes anyway. To add, you know, $35 a year, yeah, not a big deal. But you know what? It's kind of insulting, in my opinion. I'm glad you pointed that out. So there is going to be one parking enforcement officer for all of Newport? Is that what I'm hearing?
I'd be really clear about Nye Beach, City Center, and Bayfront.
Okay,
officers regularly regularly do parking. They don't do them a lot, but if somebody's is parking in a hazardous way, the police will go out and issue a ticket anywhere in the city. But that's not the police officer's primary duty. This parking enforcement, that's what they do, but it will be for Bayfront, Nye Beach, and City Center. Because those are the areas where we have time parking restrictions.
Okay, and I'm sorry. My name is Carolyn Ackerman. I own Petunia's Place down in Nye Beach. I also own several of the commercial units down there. Another one of my questions for you is, and my biggest concern is, my building does have a private parking lot. You spoke earlier about having a discussion with Nana's. Well, for the past almost 7 years, I have been in an ongoing feud with Nana's because Nana's will not work with our building and tell their customers, you can't park there, okay? I personally paid for a huge sign. That's right at our thing.
I think I've got nailed at you.
Okay.
By you.
Because you know what? You're not only taking business away from our units, Kevin being one of the businesses that is in my building, but you're also creating a liability for me. Because about 3 years ago now, and this has been going on with Nana's for years, a drunk patron of Nana's parked in our lot, got hammered in their place, came back in my lot, backed their car out, drove into and took out the base of one of our rear stairways that goes up to the upstairs condos. Cost us over $4,000 to get that fixed. Nana's was like, oh, well, tough shit, you know. Nana's is, I mean, them's is the one you need to look at for, as far as parking. Because this whole thing, I want to know how the city is going to protect business owners and property owners like myself that do have private parking lots. We do pay exorbitant property taxes on. How are you going to protect us from having all those people that don't want to pay for parking come into my lot? We have the issue now. That's a problem now.
I also have a business and have a parking lot, and the city, it's not their, I feel like it's not the city's responsibility to maintain my parking lot. I am fully aware that people park in our parking lots all day long and they never step foot in my business. And, but that's my issue to figure out. It's not the city's issue to figure out.
If they're putting in paid parking, it is.
Well,
because they're forcing people now to look for free parking. I mean, 90% of the people in Nye Beach say, we don't want this. And I mean, for the money that it's going to generate,
well, the
I
paid
think
parking
you can find
is
it
not by
else.
The paid parking is still down on the turnaround.
I understand that,
yeah.
But trust me, people are they're doing it now.
No, I get it.
Know?
I mean, I have two lots in two places on the Bayfront, and people parking it all day
and
long.
And that's your, you know, liability. Your liability is going, you know, and so that's really why I'm here tonight, is to protect the owners in my building, to protect their investments, and to make sure our liability doesn't skyrocket. I mean,
and you have a meeting with the police chief, right?
I do, 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon,
okay.
Yes.
All right, so
any consolation is I don't park in your lot anymore after you.
we do have to wrap at 8.
Oh, okay.
So about 5 minutes.
Go ahead.
Thank you. For your
thank
time.
You.
I appreciate
thank
it.
Yeah, Sandy Blackman, and I'm with the new developed co-op, Surfside Community. It's low-income housing. It's been converted. The state, you know, took us under their wing. And the AMI, you know, for the Lincoln County for a single person is like $43,000.
What's the AMI,
and,
sorry?
Huh?
AMI.
Average medium income.
Okay, okay.
I didn't know what it was when I started either
okay.
with the state of Oregon. And so in my population, most of us are on Social Security. There's 33 spots, and we qualified 100%. And so there are people, I know, I put in a letter to you, you know, about the red zone that goes all the way up to Nye Street. And I know that, you know, I was at the meeting, and I appreciated to find out, because the map was a little confusing, that the, you know, the parking, the 3 to 6 hours or whatever it is, stops right at Herbert Street by us.
Right.
But I, you know, I'm third generation living in Nye Beach. My grandparents moved here in the 1930s. So I feel very attached to this area. It's low income housing. It's low, you know, pay. On that third street, we have an apartment building that's low income. Up above us, there are two more low income. We have duplexes. And I just don't want to see, you know, this pay for expand in any way, because we have limited parking in our area. So people come for hospice, and they don't want to park out there, so they want us to park out there. We have home health care that my husband did twice for 2 months, and they don't want to park out on the street because they have medical stuff. We have long-term, you know, their children that show up that are in their 60s taking care of somebody who's 95 years old. So, and if you have a contractor come in, they want to park, you know, they have to park in your parking spot. And again, you're forced out on the street. So, you know, I just want us to be aware that this, that street, I call it the worker bees. You know, the worker bees and low income, you know, housing is very prominent in Nye Beach.
That outside the parking zone that we're talking about now?
Yeah, it ends right at our street, at Herbert Street.
For
future, because I'm with Ripka that, you know, yeah, you know, if it goes well, it might be expanding. And what I want to say is that the red line is not from Nye Street down on Olive Street down to the Pack. That wasn't designed, you know, in that area. And it wasn't designed on 6th Street. And really, the tourists come to Nye Beach based on those stoplights on 6th Street and Highway 20 and 101. That's how the tourists come. And there's no, you know, outlining of, you know, that parking would be there or eventually be there. I do want to say in my park, I have people that don't even have internet, let alone a cell phone. You know, so QR codes, I know everybody talks about this. I'm a director on another board with a city that belongs to the city, and everybody on my board was 30 to 70 years old. I'm going to be 75. And they said, oh, put a QR code on our poster. And what I found out, that only one person on my whole committee, including the city guy, didn't even do QR codes. So, you know, you have to keep an idea about what people can and can't do. I also heard at that meeting a woman said, well, this is the main beach access for people. And that's true, because the other ones are by motels, they're up on cliffs, there's stairs, you can't get down to them, as you know, by a wheelchair. The only place is western, below the western, but I grew up in, it was called Agate Beach, and it's the western motel. And those two, ours, Nye Beach and them, are the only ones that are really for the locals and tourists combined, because everything else is high up. You know, stairs, you can't access them. I'm not sure, you know, I believe that, you know, I'm not really supportive, I'm going to say, to put in meters, you know, down at the turnaround. But I understand that you have needs and budgets and things have to be fixed. I'm more like, let's do seasonal. Let's do, you know, Labor Day to Memorial Day, you know, or... some way, because the locals, you know, walking their dogs, everybody, you know, and that's one of the things that people have come into my park, you know, that they want to be close to the beach and they're very low income. So I just would like you to keep an eye on, you know, this, we're not, there's not expensive living where we live. It's low income. It's always been low income since my grandparents in the 30s, you yeah. know. And that's a fact. And I know that you want to fix it up, but let's not gentrify it too much, okay? Let's leave it the way it is. And I want to say, along with the VAC, you didn't discuss that the YAA, Yukuna Arts Association, they have the same issues. They have people, you know, coming to the shows, and they show every 2 weeks, and there's all this loading and unloading. And, you know, the VAC is trying to make money for the city to stay open. And so, you know... this is really important, but it's not a commercial area like the Nye Beach, and last of all, excuse me, like the Bayfront. I don't go down on the Bayfront anymore. I don't eat down there. I don't shop down there anymore. I just don't. So.
Well, thank you for all the feedback.
I would like to say something.
Yeah, there's some
people.
We have
one more.
Colleen, if you want to.
Stanley, he's been here.
Yeah, go ahead.
So.
Can you just identify yourself? Your name?
Yes, Stanley Morris.
Thanks.
I've lived here since 1988, the year I was born. My mom's lived here since 1970. I grew up in Nye Beach. Nye Beach was a poor neighborhood. It was cottages, whole place, houses no bigger than this room. Half the size of this room.
Well, the hippies lived.
The per capita income of Newport is $37,000, and the medium household income is $57,000, which I used to be a fisherman. I used to make $120,000 to $200,000 a year, and then I hurt myself and was not able to do that anymore. Now I'm making about $50,000 a year, and I can tell you with the rates at which rent is right now in Newport, we have a high majority of people are renting. Houses. If they're making as much as I am, which is 43% according to the Chamber of Commerce, 43% under 50K. This seems like class warfare almost. It seems like you're trying to drive out poor people. Well, Nye Beach originally was an art neighborhood. 30% of people make 50 to 100. Like I said, with the median being 57,000. I mean, we get 2.5 million people per year that come here as tourists. Sometimes our little community of 10,500 gets grossly inflated to 100,000. I'm just wondering where all that revenue from 2.5 million people is going, that we can't take care of these issues without a new tax implemented on us. So at what point do we have to ask, where's money being wrongly spent? And why does this have to be a new tax? We're already taxed to death.
Well, and I think that, if I might, just quickly answer that question, there's no sales tax, so we don't get a cut of that. Real estate tax, the city only gets a small portion of the income, you know, of the property taxes that are paid to the state. They go to the state, and the state redivides them. Our gas tax has gone down as people have gotten more and more efficient cars and more electric cars, which is, so the tourists are coming in, they're maybe buying gas, but they're buying less of it, so that's dropped our revenue, which is one of the reasons we asked for that 3-cent hike in gas tax to help offset that. But it's going to be an ongoing issue as more and more EVs come in and less people use gasoline. So there's a lot of places where it looks like there's a lot of tax or revenue coming in, but it's not actually coming to the city. I would totally invite you to come to one of the budget meetings and look at all of the information that we get inundated with, which shows us all of our expenses, all of our revenue sources, which a lot of them are our federal grant money, which now we're obviously concerned about that too. So there's a lot of complex issues. It's not like I can say, well, A, B, and C. I wish I could. One of the things we're doing with this, the goal is, that's a high demand for tourist area, that turnaround. So let's try to get some tourists to pay. That's one of the reasons we're, I think we're looking at making it seasonal, so it's not in the off season. And during the week when there's locals here, we can come down and enjoy it for free. Also, currently, since there's no permit or no paid parking in Don Davis, you can just park over there too, or in the pack. So one of the things is we do want to create a change in behavior so that lot's not always full. That's one of the ways we're doing it. And obviously it's going to discomfort a lot of us because we're used to being able to go down there and park for free for all day. So that's a trade-off. Some of the niceties of living here get offset. So we're trying to find the right balance, and that's why I'm happy to hear this feedback, and I know that the committee does a great job of working on trying to find the best solution for the most people. And I just would like you to understand that that's all we're trying to do, is get the best solution for the most people. Maybe your particular solution will be good, maybe it won't, but we're trying our best for everyone, and we're balancing these needs. So,
if I may just say, my name is Bonnie Good, and I just want to very quickly touch on a couple of the issues that I heard when we went to the meeting at the Performing Arts Center, and also this one. One is that I hear a lot of all the talk really is about money, revenue, and I understand it's a very big issue. There's no denying that. The couple of things that I would like to touch on is, first of all, your idea is far from being simple. And there's a quote that I really like. It says, if the path has too many obstacles, maybe it's the wrong path. This seems like it has a lot of obstacles. We've got coupons, we've got coin, we've got cards, we've got phones, all these things. It just seems so convoluted to me. And yeah, if you're here for so many hours, we'll give you a coupon. Where are we going to get the coupons? Who's going to give you the coupons? Convoluted is the first word that comes to my mind. The second thing I will say is, coming into Newport, we have two signs, and both of those signs say Newport the friendliest. This doesn't feel friendly to me. It doesn't feel friendly to the business owners. It doesn't feel friendly to the residents, and it doesn't feel friendly to the visitors. And I'm 81 years old. I grew up in the 60s, and this just seems like another area that we are heading in the wrong direction. And I really sympathize and empathize with the fact that we need revenue. I understand that completely. But I'm not, I I think we need to go back to the drawing board on this one, and that's really all I have to say.
Well, thank you all for being here, and thank you for that feedback as well. You know, I mean, without everybody represented here in our weekly meetings, we don't always hear all of the points of view from every member of our community, so it's really important that you do come and you do share this with us, because we do take everybody's feedback and try to really make the best solution that we can from that feedback. So thank you, everybody, for all of your comments.
Is there a procedure for, like, delegating the outreach of the communication aspect of, like, the businesses, like,
so we have a new communications person with the city, right, who's back here. But we talk about that in the meetings, and the need for more of that. And I think that one thing, like I was thinking when she was talking about that, how do we know all these things? I mean, I think that we can always look. It's not me. I'm just on the committee, but we do talk about how do we make the communication better. So I think that can be definitely be on our agenda.
I think it's clear that Nye Beach doesn't want this, so I hope that our opinions matter.
They do.
At both meetings, I really hope that I don't see this roll out. I think you should, myself, I think you can find money in the $400,000 a year that you're spending with Travel Oregon, but just my opinion.
And I want to thank you for doing your service. Yeah. I know that you're all volunteer. I know that's hard. You know, I've been where you sat, and I know how that is. And I think that we've been trying to just, you know, listen and be polite and, you know, just give our feedback. So thank you for what you do.
Yeah. Thank you.
You know,
for being here. Yeah.
But we do have concerns, you know.
I'll just move the goals discussion to the next meeting, if that's fine. And I'll be prepared to kind of talk about, I'll be coordinating with John. Let you know what comes with that, and we'll start to mock up kind of a resolution for the snow now.
And then also, I think we need to, well, I guess we're being over, but I think that we need to also discuss our the qualifications for what gets involved in
council members,
you know, the businesses,
not living and working.
You know what I mean? Yeah. All of that kind of thing.
We'll flesh it out to the school board.
Yeah.
I mean, just
I have a family.
Sorry, Terry. What do we do? We do like a family.